It's always a pleasure to meet the narrators who bring books to life for us. And because RNIB Connect Radio's London studio is in the same building as the Talking Books studio, I get plenty of opportunity. This week, when a familiar voice offered to help me clear up the tea I just spilt, I leapt at the chance to invite David Monteith onto the show. I began by asking him which book he's recording at the moment.
A biography of Keir Hardie.
Any good?
It's very good. It's very interesting. It's always fascinating to read about the history and the founding of the Labour Party, where it came from, a lot about the founding principles and about the man himself.
He had quite a hard life, didn't he?
He did. He was a miner. He was born to a very poor family. I think he was the eldest of five or six, and I'm going back 3 days now, and I can't always remember what I read on Friday. But certainly, possibly two of his siblings died when very young. So he was part of a very large family. He recounts a story about being sacked when he worked for a bakery, for a baker's, a very wealthy baker's. And because his father was away looking for work, his father was a ship's carpenter, he was away looking for work. His mother was ill, and so young Keir was the only breadwinner. Because he was working so hard, the weather was dreadful, he turned up late for work, 15 minutes late. He was told by the girl he was working for, under the auspices of this much richer baker, he was told by her that if he was late again, he would be in serious trouble. Unfortunately, the next day he was also 15 minutes late. This was the second day he was late, was his payday. He turned up at work, hoping that everything would be well, was instructed to go and visit the senior employer, the very wealthy man who was sitting at this massive breakfast table with his entire family assembled. Young Keir was soaked to the skin, barefoot, basically rags, you know, the archetypal, stereotypical urchin. He was told that he had brought the bakery into disrepute and that people to whom he was supposed to be delivering were going to leave the bakery because they weren't getting their morning rolls when still hot. So he was sacked. Not only was he sacked, he was fined the previous week's wages. So lost his job, was sent home to an ill mother with nothing but the girl who had chastised him the day before gave him a single roll. He knew of what he spoke when he was founding the Labour Party.
The social injustice really sort of...
Absolutely.
And he worked in the mines as well, didn't he, for a bit?
He did. Again, it's jumping quite a lot back in the story, and I've gone beyond there, but I think he was in the mines for about 15 years.
Gosh, a hard life as well, but one that led him to become a union representative and led to his political career.
Absolutely. And interestingly, for somebody who was born in Scotland and sort of lived a lot of his life in Scotland, he was an MP in England and in Wales, but never in Scotland.
Oh, how funny. I never realised that. I wonder what he would have thought of Jeremy Corbyn. I mean, Keir Hardie was the man who suggested state socialism at the beginning of the 20th century.
Yes, indeed. I suspect he would have seen eye to eye with Mr. Corbyn on many things. He said, treading in middle ground.
Well, maybe not appearing at Glastonbury, but...
Well, Keir Hardie certainly appeared at many conferences and events and meetings. I guess part of what he would say is any way you can get the message out and across to people is worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. I was looking down the list of talking books that you've narrated for the RNIB Library, and you're quite a one for taking the renegade characters, aren't you? Especially the Scots.
Well, that's just I'm Scots, and that's where I'm from. That's where my accent naturally lends itself to, and that's the nature of the books I'm offered.
Did you enjoy reading? I think it was Renegade by Robin Young, the Robert the Bruce book.
I did. Obviously, that was based on fact. There was a lot of interesting story woven around that to tie lots of things together. But yeah, it's a great book. Massively difficult in one respect, in that before one of the huge battles, there were a huge number. There were, from memory, I think it was about 30 young Scottish noblemen all talking to each other, all discussing the battle, which made the vocal transition, from the voiceover point of view, made the vocal transition from one character to another, working out who was speaking when it didn't necessarily say, you know, said John, said Robert, said Dugald, made it very complicated. But it was a fantastic read. Great story.
How do you go about preparing that? Do you have coloured markers or...?
Yes, I normally read from an iPad, and there's a piece of software called iAnnotate. So I'm usually set, not so much with R&IB books, they tend to be paper. Mm. But for commercial books, they are almost always PDF format. I get them and I very simply read the book and then read it again, highlighting dialogue and working out which a colour coding for each character, so that I know when I do a quick glance down the page that... the hero is about to turn up, so it's just it allows me a couple of seconds just to be aware that I'm going to have to do a vocal change.
So in some ways, it's not only are you the complete cast of actors, but you are also the director as well.
In many respects, yes, because I'm making the decision about how a line comes out. Sometimes it's not necessarily a conscious decision, it just presents itself. You happen to say something with a particular emphasis that you may not even have considered when you were reading it.
And what led you to the R&IB Talking Books Library in the first place?
I was offered a book. It was that simple. I spent years as I still am, a commercial voiceover. I do an awful lot of work on film and television. But one of the commercial publishers approached me about doing a book. I happened to end up doing it here. Would I be interested in reading for R&IB? And I said, absolutely, yes, of course.
Quite a lot of tartan noir.
Yes, I do an awful lot of Scottish crime.
I mean, you don't strike me as a particularly threatening man, but do you have a rasping burr to your voice for which you
There
say-
is a certain pitch I can get to if I really need to.
I'm scared now.
he lied through his teeth.
I recognised that from, I think you did an Inspector Rebus, didn't you? A Question
yes,
of Blood.
Yes, I did.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's your chilling voice.
Well, it's one of them. It's like, I suppose it's, being a musician. You have certain tunes that you can fall back on that you know are going to be popular. And sometimes you have to just use them to allow the story to roll on. Mm-hmm. And you get to do maybe slightly more adventurous stuff with incidental characters. It can be very, vocally, very tiring to do too rough and deep and gravelly a voice for an entire book.
Mm.
So my Scots heroes tend to have, as I do, light Glasgow accent, slightly heavier than the one that I normally speak with, because my voice is narrator voice, and then you have what I think of as hero voice, which is, you know, or anti-hero voice, which is the one that I go to most easily, the one that I can get to at any point.
I also noticed that you have rather a nice hero in The Nicest Viking.
That was an absolute joy. They were great. I love reading kids' books. I used to read to my own kids before they got to an age where they went, Dad, stop reading to us. It's boring.
And, well, a book that you read that is very real and that I enjoyed dipping in and out of because it was a world I knew nothing about was Song to the Clyde, a history of shipbuilding on the Clyde.
That was quite a personal one. Obviously, growing up in Glasgow, I was very aware of the river, but my grandfather was a naval architect. He designed submarines in the 1930s. So when I saw it sitting on the shelf, I said to Rupert, if when you were considering casting that, you might consider me, I would be eternally grateful.
Oh, it's a wonderful collection of stories and anecdotes and insights into, well, a world that's gone. I mean, not only are the ships' names forgotten, but so are the names of the people who worked there.
Indeed. And the number of shipyards. I mean, I remember about four names growing up in Glasgow in the 60s and 70s. There were, I mean, obviously more than that. There were yards that weren't the huge commercial yards that we think of today. My grandfather worked in Yarrow's. There were John Brown's. There were, you know, a few others dotted about the Clyde. But from the book, I learnt about the literally hundreds, if not thousands, of shipyards that there had been, and not just on the Clyde, which obviously the main river going through Glasgow, but on all the tributary rivers and even the canals, there were bona fide, proper shipyards making narrow boats or canal boats or structures that were then used, transported down those canals to the big major yards. So it's a fascinating process.
And do you often find yourself really engaged with the books that you read?
I think you have to be, because you're trying to express the story, and you always have to remember that it is, generally speaking, it is a story rather than a biography. As the narrator or the reader, you have to be committed to the point of view or the course of action that any character you're reading about is going through at that time. Be that something, you know, wonderful, a celebration, or you know, massive love story or whatever, you have to buy into that with the same degree of enthusiasm as you have to buy into being the murderer in a rebus. It has to be from the point of view of the character at the moment you're reading it, because that's, in theory, what I'm providing to the listener.
Thanks to David, and we'll be hearing more from him later in the show. For a full list of titles that he's narrated, just go to rniblibrary.com or call the helpline on 0303 123 9999 and select option 5.